tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's January 15th, 2025, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. We are just a few days away from a whole new administration taking power here in the U.S., and that means a ton of uncertainty and political back and forth, which, frankly, is kind of business as usual here the last couple of years. But it's still worth noting that the outgoing administration is making big waves when it comes to electrification. Biden recently pushed through $635 million in EV charger grants before Trump's return. This was about 2 days ago from Michelle Lewis. The Biden administration awarded $635 million in EV charger grants just 10 days before Donald Trump's administration takes office, leaving just $700,000 of the original $2.5 billion from the 2021 bipartisan infrastructure bill unallocated. These grants from Biden's zero emission refueling infrastructure programs will fund 49 projects that will deploy more than 11,500 EV charging ports and alternative fuel infrastructure along corridors and communities across 27 states, 4 federally recognized tribes, and the District of Columbia. $368 million will be allocated for 42 projects that expand EV charging infrastructure within communities across the U.S., while $268 million will go towards 7 projects that build out the national fast charging network along designated alternative fuel corridors. The grants, which were announced Friday, are made possible through the bipartisan infrastructure law's $2.5 billion charging and fueling infrastructure discretionary grant program and a 10% set aside from the $5 billion NEVI formula program. U.S. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said in a statement, these investments will help states and communities build out a network of EV chargers in the coming years so that one day finding a charge on a road trip will be as easy as filling up at a gas station. There are currently nearly 70,000 public EV charging stations across the U.S. with 197,000 charge ports, according to the DOE's Alternative Fuels Data Center. The Biden administration set a goal of building out 500,000 publicly available EV chargers by 2030. But they are not the only players in the game. Obviously, with a new administration comes new people influencing decisions, and one of those is the new Trump DOT nominee as well, and is signaling for extra fees for EVs, continued NHTSA investigation into Tesla. President Trump's nominee for head of the Department of Transport, Sean Duffy, has signaled imposing potential extra fees for EVs and says that he plans to let NHTSA continue its investigation into Tesla's advanced driver assistance systems. The former lawmaker and lobbyist is one of the least controversial of Trump's nominees. Unlike his other colleagues going through the gauntlet this week, he isn't being grilled about morals or past controversies, and we're actually learning some of his planned policies for the DOT. For example, Duffy signaled that he thinks electric vehicles should pay extra taxes to cover their use of roads, although he didn't elaborate how he plans to do it. Quote, they should pay for use of our roads. How to do that, I think, is a bit more challenging. So he has concepts of a plan, but he's not making a crazy point. A lot of road maintenance is paid for through gas tax, which, of course, is something that EVs don't participate in, despite the fact that they not only use the roads, but arguably use the roads more because of their greater weight compared to comparably sized ICE vehicles. Now, that goes out the window when you're talking about cars like a Mercedes-Benz E-Class or a BMW 5 Series, where even the ICE versions weigh more than a Tesla Model 3 or a Hyundai Ioniq 6 equivalent. But still, a valid point. U.S. claims to use gas taxes to pay for roads. However, the federal government hasn't increased taxes on gas since 1993, and the road infrastructure is often covered by other funds than taxes, including tolls and things like that. Some states have implemented higher registration fees on electric vehicles to address the cost of using the roads. These fees have been criticized by environmentalists as being extra taxes on EVs that don't account for the benefits of the environment at a time when the U.S. is already falling behind the rest of the world in EV adoption. Duffy was also asked about what he plans to do with NHTSA's investigation into Tesla, considering that his future boss, Donald Trump, is getting closer to Tesla CEO Elon Musk, who donated over $240 million to Trump's campaign. Senator Ed Markey asked, regardless of outside political pressure, can you commit to allowing NHTSA to follow the evidence and operate objectively? Duffy tried to reassure the senator, saying, quote, I will let NHTSA do their investigation. Tesla is currently under several NHTSA investigations regarding its advanced driver assist features, which it is deploying in unique and much more aggressive ways than its competitors. In October of 2024, NHTSA launched a broader investigation into Tesla's full self-driving supervised suite of features following a series of fatal crashes. More than that, though, there is the influence of Elon Musk, which seems to be getting greater and stronger every week. And now Elon Musk is complaining that Tesla is not getting subsidies for electric truck chargers, while at the same time calling for an end to other EV subsidies. That's pretty self-explanatory and pretty much par for the course when it comes to Elon. But this all highlights kind of what we've been getting at and what we talked about at the opening of the show, which is that there is a ton of uncertainty surrounding EVs and the EV market, not only for federal regulators, but also municipalities, utilities, state level. There's uncertainty all over the place. But the good news is that there are a number of resources out there to help guide EV stakeholders through that uncertainty and ideally into a more certain future. And one of those resources is today's guest. This is Stacy Noblet, the Vice President of Transportation Electrification at ICF. Stacy, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Joe.
Now, for people who are unfamiliar with ICF, can you give us a quick rundown of what ICF is and what you guys do?
Sure, absolutely. And thanks again for having me. So ICF is a global consulting firm. We support a range of clients and across a range of sectors. It's one of the oldest and largest consultancies in the world. And for this conversation, what's relevant is that I sit in our energy, environment, and infrastructure group, and a subset of that group supports utilities. I have experience designing and implementing clean transportation programs. I spent a lot of time at the federal, state, and local levels on the government side of things. But today I focus primarily on the utility sector and then more specifically the intersection between energy and transportation.
So I think that's really important work right now, because as we start to see some uncertainty in the kind of EV incentives that are going to be out there in the coming years, we're starting to see more state governments come up, more local governments come up, and a lot of incentive programs coming out from the utility companies. Can you talk a little bit about the work ICF is doing directly with those incentive programs?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. You know, in the absence of federal action in the past, we've seen more action at the state and local levels and would expect that to be the case. But even, you know, when the federal support has been strong, state and local, you know, specifically utility programs have given us a lot to work with as well. So ICF is involved in supporting the implementation of those programs, meaning we're standing up things like application portals, providing customer care to answer questions about those programs, in many cases out on the ground, providing outreach and technical assistance to customers who want to take advantage of the programs. What the programs look like, it might be an equipment rebate, make ready incentives, also some, you know, maybe non-cash incentives in the form of technical assistance, which is increasingly important in, you know, the fleet sector, for example. And then maybe upstream of those programs actually running and pushing funding and support into the market, we're also helping to design the program. So that might look like benefit cost analysis or building up costs that a utility, you know, is asking permission to spend on these programs. And, you know, a lot of that is informed by our implementation of the program. So because ICF is kind of involved on both sides, in many cases, we're able to help kind of infuse the best practices and learnings from these programs that, you know, at this point are still pretty nascent, but many of them are moving into more, you know, long-term programs rather than pilots.
And we're starting to see some real noticeable progress on those public charging infrastructure, even private charging infrastructure, both in terms of the build out and improved customer experience. There was a study that came out last December talking about how there was 50% more engagement with public charging over the Thanksgiving weekend than the year before, but there were lower wait times because the infrastructure build out and the speed of charging networks is meeting the demand. Can you talk a little bit about some of the different program partners that you guys are working with, anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some utilities have been involved in that public sector as well, the public charging sector specifically. You know, in the early days, quite a few utilities were owning and operating stations. Many still do. Others are supporting them in other ways, whether it's a make-ready incentive or, you know, managing the charging, depending on the sector. But yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, federal funds are flowing. They have been, and private capital as well. So certainly more public charging stations across the country, and focus on those key travel corridors. As you mentioned, that Thanksgiving holiday was, a good news story. We've got joint ventures like Iona, which really checks the box on some of the major automakers involved in the EV charging industry: GM, Stellantis, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, Hyundai, Kia, Honda, Toyota. Hopefully I haven't missed any. And they're focused on high-speed charging, co-located with amenities like restaurants and restrooms, which at this point EV drivers are coming to, expect. So at the same time, industry and government are collaborating, to make the charging experience more seamless, and that is happening through things like the North American Charging Standard, also referred to as J3400 in the standard speak, progress on common platforms, things like plug-in charge should kind of move those functionalities forward. And I definitely expect that activity will continue to ramp up in 2025. Hopefully, the proof points we'll start to see are more ribbon cuttings, higher driver satisfaction. And I think the industry is putting a lot of emphasis, time, energy on faster public charging, because ultimately that's where we can electrify more miles. Whether it's a, one that you or I would use that has those amenities that I mentioned, or maybe, an emerging area is the larger vehicles, medium and heavy duty vehicles, needing to have the space, to turn around and charge and do everything that those vehicles need to do. So, across all of these sectors, the experience for the user, it has to be good, it has to be easy. And, the reality is, with the exception of home charging, we're just not there yet. So the industry will forever be really stacked up against gas vehicle comparison, where you know where to fuel, how to fuel, you're highly confident that there will be a working pump.
Well, and I think that that's something that it often goes unsaid, that when you buy an EV, even if you're buying a used EV right now, there's a possibility of having up to three different charging ports, right? You could have a CCS, you could have the CHAdeMO if you're buying a Nissan or an older Kia Soul, for example. And then now the new NACS Tesla J3400 connector, whatever we're going to call it. And I know I didn't prep you for this question, so I apologize in advance for this, but I always felt like the lack of a national charging standard where you had to seek out these different charging pumps. I mean, you could very simplistically say, well, it's sort of like having a diesel car versus a gas car, but nobody has a diesel car, not really, except for a few like Volkswagen or Mercedes enthusiasts, right? So this is really something that I think has been an obstacle, is that you have to now relearn how to pick a fueling station. But now that we have this national charging standard, in the next couple of years, the next generation of vehicles, they're all going to have kind of the same plug. Do you feel like that's going to simplify and improve the customer experience, where we just don't have that layer of training and learning anymore?
For the most part, there's the sector of EV drivers that will have home charging. That's easy, that's covered. There's the sector that maybe doesn't have charging at home, but are using stations locally. They're going to get to know the landscape on the ground. They're going to know where to go. It's really that long distance travel where that, those issues come into play, is if you're in an unknown area, you need to know where to go to get what you need in terms of charging, matching the vehicle, the power levels that you need, the reliability of knowing it's there. And so absolutely, I mean, I think that having that standardization does simplify things. It still does not guarantee a perfect experience for everyone. The Tesla Supercharger experience is superior, and that's what everyone's, trying to get to. And so hopefully we do see that even with the use of, adapters where they're approved, and some of the magic docks and all of the things that have been happening over the last couple of years. It's pairing that, okay, yes, I can charge here with the great experience that we all, at this point have come to expect.
So these are all things that obviously affect the broader EV market. What are other trends that you're looking at as ICF that you're tracking? What are the big market movers that you think we should watch out for in 2025?
For me, the pre-owned or used EV market is one that, I've been really interested in the last couple of years. In particular, there was a, kind of a increase of inventory for a while, and then a contraction of that inventory. But I think that overall, we're going to see increased interest in the vehicles and pre-owned vehicles as more start to come available. This might be, rolling off of leases or entering the marketplace in other ways. And just starting, this past January 1st, EVs at least 2 model years old became eligible for federal incentives that are specific to those vehicles. So that's a big deal. And then considering, we've seen high EV sales numbers, 2022, 2023, that's a significant number of EVs becoming eligible for a tax credit, backing up those 2 years. So the uncertainty around the fate of federal incentives at this point, it actually makes this prediction a little bit tricky, but the uncertainty may actually motivate buyers to move sooner rather than later. So, I'm interested to see when we start to see the reports about taking advantage of those incentives at the federal level. And then just, kind of the market companies like Recurrent are doing a great job of tracking that, particular sector, and putting out some really great reports that, I think we should all follow along with, because it just makes the EVs more accessible. That lower price point, those vehicles are still in really great shape with, plenty of battery capacity. I think it's a really good opportunity for, people who are maybe hesitant to pay the higher sticker price of a brand new vehicle to kind of dip their toe in. So, a lot more user stories we'll start to see from the pre-owned market and just, the overall all stats from that sector as well.
I think that's a great point with the used car market. And I think, we talk a little bit about the uncertainty surrounding the future federal incentives. And you can say that, regardless of how the political winds shift, incentives change, policies change, and they adapt to market realities. I really want to point out, though, that, if you talk about Tesla, which is obviously the major player in the EV space, especially when you look back to 2021, 2022, they had already used up all of their federal incentives. So they weren't getting a dime of that money, and they still had record years and record
Yeah.
growth that I think any automaker would love to see right now. So I think that, you're making some excellent points here. I think people are interested in the technology. They see it as the future. We're still seeing nearly 2 out of 3 buyers saying that their next vehicle they're going to consider an EV. So I think, yeah, that's a
Yeah.
great place to put it. And I think as a second car is something that people are going to look at as a budget option. Maybe they're going to take a swing, not on a new one, but maybe on a CPO or a lightly used
Yeah.
off-lease vehicle. So I think that makes a ton of sense. So, Stacy, once again, thanks for being on the show. I know we're coming to the end of our time commitment here. I want to be respectful of that. I often offer this to my other guests. If I was a smart person and had done good research, what would be a question that I would ask you that would be that you would have a really good answer for?
You
And
don't
we can
have to
edit
edit.
that out if you don't like it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. I don't know if you've looked into it, but one of the things that sort of puzzled me is that Tesla wasn't allowing people to buy out their leases for a while, and that
Correct.
restarted. I actually got an email saying about it from Tesla, which I think is really interesting. And speaking to the pre-owned vehicle conversation, it opens up a whole new opportunity, I think, for a lot of people. So interested if you have any insight on the motivation for that, and
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
federal incentive related. But I also think it's just a good thing in general.
Yeah. Well, at the time that Tesla was doing that, they had something like a 12 to 16 month waiting list on their vehicles. And they were trying to control the lease residual, right? So the residual at the end of the lease is the buyback amount. And if you were buying a Model 3, let's say for $54,000, paying on it for 3 years, and then the residual was 36, but you could sell the car for 45 or 48. That was generating a profit. So a lot of the early adopters were taking that car, flipping it, and making good money. So Tesla saw that as a cash opportunity, as a way to control their residual pricing. Somewhere along the way, they kind of burned through their, let's say, pent-up demand, and that waiting list disappeared. Where now, even on the Cybertruck, the Model S Plaid, any kind of Tesla that you want, you can effectively place an order and get it in 1 to 3 days. And if you're in one of those states or Indian reservations, Native American reservations that allow Tesla dealerships, you can practically walk out the door with one if you show up with the proper financing. So the demand wasn't there. And now I think Tesla is less confident in their residuals, or at least their residuals are more closely related to actual market conditions than they were before, which I think where they were artificially set before. And now they're using it as a we don't want this inventory. And some of that is because of the price wars that they launched. Obviously, they've cut the prices on some of their more popular models by more than 25%
Right.
in an age when, we're some people are paying $9 for a dozen eggs. So, we have seen inflation everywhere else. The cost of Teslas has gone down almost like on par with like big screen TVs. And then finally, you had a lot of statements surrounding full self-driving and the robo-taxi promise that these were going to be vehicles that could pay for themselves while you slept. These were going to be appreciating assets. And now, as you're starting to see version 13, version 13.1 of the full self-driving software come out, and they're actually going fewer miles than the 12, version 12, version 11 between critical disengagements. I think this is a kind of a tacit admission on Tesla's part that these are not going to be robo taxis that generate income. These are just going to be
Yeah.
cars. And Tesla is starting to do business less like a tech company and more like a car company. So that's just my two cents on that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I recorded it. I'll throw that in on the smart question, maybe that I had an answer to and was not in any way reflective of Stacy's opinions, but
No, I think
hey.
it's really interesting. I think it, you know, again, the average consumer doesn't know that, doesn't have that perspective. And to them, it's like, oh, I can get a Tesla for cheaper, this is great. Or I can, you know, I've already invested through a lease term, let's just keep it going. So, you know, again, I think from an accessibility perspective, it's a good news story. It may not reflect great, you know, on the business, but yeah,
I
availability
always
is
have to
good.
be careful though, because whenever you say anything about Tesla, positive, negative, it doesn't matter. If you say, man, that Tesla really did a smart thing here, you get 40 comments about Elon is evil. And then if you say, man, that was a really dumb thing Tesla did, you get, oh, how dare you? Elon's a
Yeah,
hero. So
can't
it's like,
please
you know what?
anybody.
Can't please anybody. Just don't even talk about it. Just like, all right, whatever. Once again, that was Stacey Noblett from ICF. You can learn more about the work ICF does at icf.com and stay up to date with the latest EV news and incentives right here on Quick Charge. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, and we'll see you tomorrow.